Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time cat caretaker.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that appreciates the fact that the editors we have worked with over the past quarter century have always gone out of their way to add interesting music to our, what the Italians refer to as, intervallos. It should come as no surprise, then, that music is on our minds this week, especially when it comes to documentary films that address both it and the artists who create and perform it. This trend has taken off lately, what with documentary studies of groups as diverse as Led Zeppelin, Billy Joel, and DeVoe. But looking back, performers such as Nina Simone, Beyoncé, and Taylor Swift have been featured as well, both in biographical studies and in concert coverage. Let's begin this show by asking Nathan, our resident music specialist, to give his thoughts about why this has become such a popular subgenre and what he likes most about those he considers his favorites.
I should be clear that we're talking about a specific subgenre of music documentary, the biographical career retrospective. I guess that's the best way to
describe it. As opposed to concert.
We're not talking about concert films like Stop Making Sense or The Last Waltz. We're not talking about movies that narrowly focus on like a single period in an artist's career. So like Don't Look Back about Bob Dylan. These are movies that are reflecting on an artist's entire body of work, on their cultural legacy, and usually telling us how amazing they are. And this is a major trend. Like, we're not talking about like a blip on the radar. At the rate things are going, every artist in the world will eventually have one of these, and it will be streaming on your platform of choice. And I was talking amongst the three of us about how weary I am of this trend, because even the good ones, I feel like they're all kind of the same and I've run out of things to say about them. And so now here we are devoting a full half hour to them. Why are there so many of them? Well, I've been thinking about this. So first of all, I think music is just an ideal subject for a documentary, because concert footage is documentary and because we all love watching our favorite artists do their thing. But I think the main reason that these kinds of biographical music documentaries have really taken off recently is that, one, we're kind of obsessed with nostalgia right now. Nostalgia is king. And two, streaming has made it possible for more of these movies to get bankrolled, because for some reason, people have never gone to theaters to see nonfiction films, but they'll watch hours of documentaries on streaming platforms. So I think that's possibly why we've seen such a boom of them. Also, a lot of these artists are now participating in these documentaries, and that's an issue we can talk about, where if you want to get access to their catalog, if you want to get access to all that archival footage and information, you have to have the artist's stamp of approval. So does that seem about right to you?
It does seem about right. And also, I was wondering, and maybe this is way off track, but we've heard a lot in the relative recent past, and I'm thinking of Taylor Swift buying back her music and her sort of giving a warning to young musicians. So I'm wondering how much the royalties, or how much giving some credit to the original performers, because we find out in many of these documentaries that these people were ripped off by various folks. And so I'm wondering if that's an incentive as well. So there's got to be a business angle here,
I think there's definitely a business angle here. And I don't think it necessarily has to do with the artists itself, as it is the companies that own the rights to this music, so that they do, say, a story like The Zombies' recent documentary, Hung Up on a Dream. Does anybody know about The Zombies? Oh, my God, there's a movie about them. Let me go back and start streaming their music. Let me go back and, you know, if you still have a CD collection, let's go buy that. So somebody's making money out of this. But that ties into the sense of nostalgia that you talk about, Nathan, and just our curiosity. People magazine, Rolling Stone magazine. We want to know about these people. My only issue is, you talked about the Billy Joel. It's 5 hours. Did it need to be 5 hours plus long? And second of all, first half is terrific. The second half contains a lot of people just slobbering over how much they love Billy Joel and how much he means to the American songbook. So
that's a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about next, which is what's good and bad about this form of documentary. And I actually wanted to use the Billy Joel miniseries as sort of an example for the pluses and minuses.
Miniseries meaning two segments.
Yeah, so it runs, like you said, it's a bit shy of 5 hours. And it's on HBO. It's called Billy Joel and So It Goes. What I like about this particular miniseries is that it does what I think all of these movies should do, which is teach me things I didn't know about Billy Joel. In particular, it deals with all the hardships he faced before becoming a huge star, some of which were genuinely harrowing. And it gave me context for some of his music so that now I hear some of those songs differently than I did before I saw the movie. I also like that this particular film has rock journalists and music historians sitting down and talking about Billy Joel's critical cachet, because that has been fraught over the years. And I think they bring a lot of really great context to his work.
And did we say the actual title?
Yeah,
Billy Joel and So It Goes. Yeah.
The problems in this particular documentary, I think they're representative of the entire form, really, which is it's so concerned with being exhaustive, as you mentioned, that it dwells on certain chapters of his career that are just not as interesting as others, because it's trying to give, you know, equal weight to every piece of his catalog. And then near the end, because this always happens, these movies almost always have a moment where they talk about like the thornier pieces of these artists' lives and careers, and it kind of breezes past them in this Billy Joel film. So it can arrive at a happy ending at the end, basically. But I do think ultimately this film does what a good bio doc, I guess we can call them that, should do, which is it focused on an artist that I thought I already knew, and it made me realize that I didn't know him as well as I thought. And on top of that, it has a bunch of really good concert footage and that kind of good stuff.
Well, I'm going to make a finer distinction here, having seen Billy Joel in concert in 1980 and then sort of watching his career go forward. Again, he was plagued with addiction throughout his career, and that had an impact on his marriages and his other relationships. But here's a finer distinction. Billy Joel, until May of this year, was still performing live. And then he announced he had a brain disorder.
Yeah, which the movie doesn't mention.
No, because I think it was filmed before.
Right.
But I was waiting to see some sort of epilogue about what happened. The other documentaries that are coming out now really are dealing with groups that are a little bit more obscure to others than the Cognoscenti, which, by the way, Dan, I must correct your pronunciation or your reference to Intervallos. It's Intervalli.
Oh, yes.
Just
I'm
saying,
sorry.
Okay? Yes. Just want to get the Italian right. And I think that that's a different thing. If you have these performers themselves today talking about the fact that they're still performing, I think that's different than looking back, and we'll talk about Devo, we'll talk about the Zombies, we'll talk about Led Zeppelin. I mean, that added something different.
Well, and there's got to be, you were talking, Dan, about this idea of, oh, well, a documentary is going to drive somebody to listen to the music
and
you know, they become a fan. And I think there probably is an element to that. Like, if you were an artist, wouldn't you want a fawning documentary about how great your career has
been?
But I also think there is, because we are seeing now these documentaries that are being made with the participation of the subject.
Yes.
Which, you know, there's always like journalistic ethics being blurred, right? But I do think there is, and it's in line with these people that have been screwed over in their careers. It's a way for them to control their own narratives well. And so I think that's a huge part of this,
too. Well, I mean, and that brings up what each of us in particular demands of one of these. And for me, it's three things. There has to be a lot of music from the group. Why are we interested in them? It's the music. Second of all, there has to be a lot of archival footage.
Yeah.
And there can be footage now of them performing now if they're still together, but it's got to be a lot of good archival footage. And the third thing is there has to be interviews with the principals themselves if they're still around, but also with professionals who can put things in perspective, who can explain the effect and why these people are important and why there's a being a movie made about them anyway.
And smart people, not just other famous musicians.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although I have
not
to
that
say,
famous musicians can't be smart.
One of the benefits of Sly Lives is the fact that we have these current musicians talking about the impact that he had on them, which I'm not sure I ever fully appreciated. I mean, once they connected the dots for me, I was like, oh, I can see this. But if we're talking about music documentaries, and we are, you know, you mentioned Talking Heads. I like it when it's mixed up among friends, family, Talking Heads who are experts or knowledgeable, or contemporaries who can comment on the impact of this music on music today and their artistic arc.
And I'm glad you mentioned Sly Lives, because I'll be talking more about that in the second half. I have a sneaking suspicion.
Okay, good to know.
We're in the middle of Pledge Drive season right now, and if you know you're a regular listener of Spokane Public Radio, a regular listener of us here on Movies 101, we can't do it without you. So please pledge. If you're a member, you can re-up your membership. We'd love to have you if you're not a member already.
Please donate at SpokanePublicRadio.org. And that was our discussion of the recent trend of documentary films focusing on musicians and the art they create. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to suggest some examples of said documentaries that you might want to check out on your own. Every single one is streaming. Until then, remember, you're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I discuss the recent trend of making documentary feature films about musicians and the music they make. Let's now turn to something a bit more specific, namely offering up some suggestions about what documentaries we most like and why you might want to check them out. I'm going to begin. We've talked recently about such groups as Devo, which is how they pronounce it. Not us. Everybody else has ever pronounced it Devo, but they pronounce it Devo, which is streaming on Netflix, directed by Chris Smith, the guy who did Wham, American Movie, and Tiger King. I love this guy.
And Devo is the movie that I wanted to talk about, because I'm not sure that I ever fully appreciated what they were doing back in the day, and this documentary allowed us to do that. First of all, it goes back to their origin story. So these guys all met each other. They're from like Akron, Ohio, and they met at Kent State during the infamous Kent State era. And they sort of clicked with one another, even though they were kind of clueless about what they were doing. But they developed this sort of alternate persona for themselves and wore all these like crazy costumes and so forth and so on. And they were probably best positioned to get involved with MTV than any other group, because they had always been doing these visual short films of their music and so forth.
Back when MTV was music television, yeah.
But just learning about their backstory, hearing some of their other songs besides the ones that we're most familiar with, such as Whip It, was really entertaining and informative to me. And Chris Smith, I believe he knows how to film a documentary. And this had sort of like all the different pieces that you were talking about of things that we like from music documentaries in particular.
Yeah, the thing that I liked about the Devo documentary, I guess I'll just say it like an idiot.
Teva, yeah. Teva.
Well, and they talk about the whole idea behind the group, this de-evolution, mm-hmm. and the idea that before they really even thought of themselves as a band, they were like sort of like a philosophy or like
almost
an art
performance
project.
Art.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that they did kind of have like a few fluke mainstream hits is so fascinating. And of course, you know, Mark Mothersbaugh, who's I guess the front man, is probably the most famous member of the band and has gone off to do lots of things in composing. But yeah, I think basically what this movie is sort of like a treatise about how Devo is kind of always ahead of the curve and they were always right, it seems. Yet at the same time, they kind of had this smirking postmodernism about them where you were never really sure if they were serious or if it was all one big joke. And even after watching the movie, I'm still not 100% sure, although I'm more on the side of they were serious. They were goofing around, but they were serious about the goofing around.
Let me run down some of the other ones that are playing out there now that are streaming that have come out within the last year. Some of these in the last couple of months. Becoming Led Zeppelin, which was on Netflix. Hung Up on a Dream, the Zombies documentary on various services. Billy Joel and So It Goes on HBO Max. Sly Lives, The Burden of Black Genius on Hulu, ABBA Against the Odds on Netflix. All these are, in one way or another, definitely worth watching. And some of them, like Becoming Led Zeppelin, fulfills at least two of my criteria: lots of music, and second of all, lots of archival footage.
I'm glad that you brought up Sly Lives. And by the way, this is how I find out that there's an ABBA documentary out there that I haven't seen. I'm probably going home right after this and watching it. But you're just scratching the surface. And also, that's indicative of the fact that these things are coming out faster than anyone can watch
them. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I want to talk about Sly Lives. And as you mentioned, the subtitle is The Burden of Black Genius. This is the latest movie by Questlove, who won an Oscar for Summer of Soul, which is one of my favorite concert documentaries. But this is about Sly Stone, best known, I think, as the leader of Sly and the Family Stone, who was alive when this documentary came out, but he has since passed away.
Just last June,
yeah,
he just
and
died.
What I liked about this particular documentary is that it is kind of what we're talking about here. It is a boilerplate retrospective of his life, his career, how he started off as like a teenage DJ in San Francisco, became a record producer and engineer, and then started the Family Stone, which was, you know, revolutionary in a lot of ways, mainly because it was integrated both in terms of race and gender. There were white people and black people and men and women playing together, and they had equal parts, which had not been seen before in mainstream rock.
That's
certainly
right. And he also mixed a bunch of new musical genres.
Yes, he was blending pop and rock and R&B
and funk.
And what I like about this particular documentary, which is streaming on Hulu, and why I think it is an exceptional version of this format, is that Questlove tends to ask questions that actually make the people on camera, his talking heads, really sit and think about what their answers are going to be. He doesn't ask the most basic questions.
No, they're open-ended.
Yes. So you have people like George Clinton and D'Angelo and Andre 3000, who, you know, all geniuses, right? And they're sitting there going, you know, I've never really thought about that.
He asks at least six or seven people in a row, what is black genius? And they none of them can answer
it. They really have to think about it. And then I also love the fact, and you don't see this very often in these kinds of movies, Questlove actually talks about why the music works. A lot of these documentaries
It's a more technical approach. And for someone such as myself, who is really ignorant about music generally, I was fascinated by that part of it.
And a lot of these documentaries, they just assume like, well, you know, this music is great. Yeah. We don't need to talk about it. He brings in Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, who break down Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again and talk about all of the pieces. They talk about how there was like almost democracy amongst the vocalists. He talks about how it goes from this chord to this chord. And then they talk about how they used it as a sample in Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. And I thought that was a thrilling segment.
Absolutely.
And I wish more of these movies actually said, okay, well, these artists have lasted. This music has lasted. But why? And I think this one actually answers that question. And I went in loving Sly and the Family Stone, but I came out loving them even more.
And it doesn't gloss over some of the problems that he had. And as a matter of fact, people are testifying now to, you know, what broke up the band. And then they get together again at the 1993 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame
induction.
And you think, oh, well, maybe this is going to be a Nope.
Yeah.
So I liked that about it, too. So it wasn't just a vanity project in any way.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the problems with the Billy Joel documentary is in the second half. The first half is when he's writing all his great hits, all the ones we still know. And then in the second half, it's basically, well, he got married to Christie Brinkley, and then he got married to this woman, and then he got married to this woman, and he was a drunk, and oh, poor Billy. And I'm a little tired. I understand how many of these groups, them, for example, the Small Faces, for example, all were screwed by the music industry.
The zombies, too.
It's horrible.
How, you know, there was a time in which they wanted to just make as much money as they could, the producers and the managers, and gave basically 10 pounds a week to the band itself. So, you know, that's story after story after story, but that story's been told.
Yeah.
What you just talked about in terms of the Sly and the Family Stone movie, in which we're explained exactly what the music is and why it works so well, that's what I'm more interested in.
Okay, so I want to close this out with a little prompt I'm going to spring on you. We talked about all of these different artists that have these biographical documentaries. I think, you know, name any artist, they'll probably get one eventually if there isn't one already out there hiding on some obscure streaming service somewhere. But what artists would you most like to see get one of these? Like, who do you want to learn more about and sit through a 90-minute film dissecting their career and their life?
I would rather sit through maybe a 60-minute film, but
okay,
I've always been a fan of the singer-songwriter Harry Chapin, and I think that I would really like to know more about what made him tick.
Well, I cheated. I have two that I want to see movies about. I'd love to see a documentary about Jim Croce, who was, you know, singer-songwriter around the same time as Harry Chapin. And he died at 30, I believe, right as his career was blowing up.
There's the documentary right there. Horrible ways these people all died.
Jeff Buckley.
Johnny Horton.
Yeah. And Jeff Buckley has a documentary out there right now. But I just think that he's one of the most incisive and witty songwriters, and he deserves his due.
Absolutely.
But another one I would love to see, this is maybe a little more obscure, is the band The Shags. There are a few people out there clapping right now, I think, like maybe five or six people that know The Shags. But they were three teenage sisters in New Hampshire who were basically forced into starting a band by their dad in the 1960s. They couldn't play their instruments. They really didn't want to be in a band. And they made this music that is unlistenable, but also like hypnotic. And it is unlike anything you've ever heard. And I would love to see their story in a film.
I'm going to gravitate toward women artists, and I'm thinking Haim, because I'm fascinated by how you, and we've seen this in many documentaries when you're working with family members, how that plays out. And I'm just curious about the backstory. I mean, we've seen different aspects of, you know, their performances. They opened for Taylor Swift, you know, on her tour. But I'm fascinated by how that will play out
going forward. We covered the waterfront.
I believe we did. During our discussion of the growing trend of documentary feature films that focus on musicians and the art that they pursue. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and I'm joined here, as always, by Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Truthart.
Yes, and if you would like to make a pledge to Spokane Public Radio, maybe you listen to us every week and want to show your appreciation, you can go right to SpokanePublicRadio.org and make a pledge there.
And thank you. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both being our technical director and editor. She also chooses the music that accompanies us each and every week. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from none other than the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. And those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.